Shabbat Shalom. Y'all? A.W. Tozer believed that the truest measure of a man or woman is how they think about God. Perhaps the truest measure of a nation is how its judicial system works. When innocent people go to prison because ambitious prosecutors suppress evidence, or officials commit perjury, or judges allow their political biases to influence cases, the judicial process is perverted. The same is true when people issue threats if a verdict is returned that isn't to their liking, or riot and destroy property rather than wait for a trial's conclusion. These are signs of a society in moral decay. Our parasha this week is entitled Shoftim, Judges, and it stresses the need for justice. The conduct of Israeli society would reflect on the God who redeemed us. After all, we ourselves had suffered unjustly for 400 years in Egypt. Did we learn from it? Would we be a nation of tzedek, justice or righteousness? Or would we become as corrupt as the nations around us? The parasha opens at Deuteronomy chapter 16, verse 18, and the balance of this chapter, as well as most of chapter 17, concerns the administering of justice. Israel was commanded to appoint judges, local officials, in each of our towns. We were warned that the judicial process must not be corrupted. There must be no partiality. Neither the wealthy nor the poor were to be shown preference. Bribery? Forbidden. Fear of public reaction? Irrelevant. Emotions of sympathy? Subordinated. If justice is to be served, only the facts, the truth, the merits of a case were to have any consideration. This, by the way, is why Lady Justice is depicted as blindfolded, holding those scales. Moses put it this way, tzedek teodof, justice, only justice shall you pursue. Judges were responsible to decide both civil and criminal cases. If any case proved too difficult, it could be brought to the priest or the judge who would be in office in the days to come. Well, there were other judicial guidelines as well. No one was to be convicted of a capital crime on the testimony of just one person. Also, if someone, and this is really important, if someone brought a criminal accusation against another, later proven to be false, the false accuser himself would suffer the due punishment for the alleged crime. In a fallen world, deterrent like this is both wise and necessary. Deuteronomy 17 also anticipated the future days of the kings. God permitted Israel to have kings, but it was a sign of our unbelief. Moses knew that we would eventually clamor for the respectability of having visible, powerful monarchs ruling us. But God put specific limitations on it. First of all, the king of Israel must be a fellow Israeli. Seems pretty obvious, but you do not want conflict of interest. The king was not to collect horses, lest he become boastful and prideful in the size of his army. The king was not to acquire horses from Egypt. God brought us out of there, and he said, you're never going back there. And of course, they were known for their having some of the best horses in the world in that day. Nevertheless, no getting horses from Egypt. The king of Israel was not to hoard for himself gold or silver, lest he become so inordinately wealthy that his heart be exalted and arrogant towards his fellow Israelis. The king must not collect many wives, even though it was common practice for kings to marry princesses of other kings in order to make alliances. That was not to be the case for Israel. And finally, the king was required to write his own copy of the Torah once he took the throne. A very worthwhile endeavor, and it would take some time. Well, centuries later, the Book of Chronicles recorded Solomon's violation of all of these statutes, leading to his downfall and the eventual split in the kingdom of Israel. Chapter 18 reminds us that the Levites would have no land inheritance. Adonai himself would be their portion. But it doesn't mean that the Levites were to be homeless. Cities and lands were to be set aside within each tribe for which the Levites could live there. And the people are reminded not to neglect the Levites, but rather to bring to them the first fruits of all their increase. That meant you gave the first 10%, the best, of your grain, your new wine, your oil, and your flocks. In this way, the Levites would never be wealthy, but they would never be in want either. And this is also a reminder for us today, I believe, to be faithful, to bring our fat portions, the best of our finances, abilities, and time. I had to throw that in. There was also a reminder in chapter 18 to establish cities of refuge so that no one would be put to death unjustly for unintentional manslaughter. Chapter 18 also contains warnings against any form of occult activity, spiritism, or any pagan forms of worship. It was for just such practices that God was driving out the Canaanites. If we imitated them, he would drive us out as well for a time. But you know, that didn't mean we couldn't inquire about the future. Everybody wants to know the future. If we truly desired to know, there was an approved way. God spoke about the prophets. But in particular, God promised that he would raise up a prophet from among us, one like Moses. We read about that earlier. And one to whom we must give our obedience. This is what Adonai said. I will raise up a prophet from among them like you. Talking to Moses, and I will put my words in his mouth, and he shall speak to them all that I command him. And it shall come about that whoever will not listen to my words, which he shall speak in my name, I myself will require it of him. This is nothing less than a prophecy of the coming Messiah. And concerning this very thing, Yeshua said, he who rejects me and does not receive my sayings has one who judges him. The word I spoke is what will judge him at the last day. For I did not speak on my own initiative, but the Father himself who sent me has given me commandment what to say and what to speak. Consequently, if we refuse to acknowledge Yeshua as the Messiah and reject his instruction, we will be held liable to the heavenly Supreme Court, whose decision is eternal and for which there is no appeal. Chapter 19 includes a warning not to move boundary stones between adjoining properties. Those property lines were determined by the will of God, and thus they were sacred and to remain constant. Chapters 20 and 21 contain laws governing warfare, including who would be exempt from military service, offering of terms of peace to cities before declaring war, the command not to harm any fruit-bearing trees of the cities we conquer, and restrictions for taking captives, including safeguarding the dignity of women taken captive in war. The thrust of this parasha, indeed much of the Torah, is that Israel was a nation whose laws distinguished her. not selfishly, but that the world might take note of the wisdom and justice and seek out the living God for themselves. In the same way, your life communicates to everyone around you, hopefully good things, and in such a way that they will seek out Yeshua. Let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. Amen.